Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyar. Fred Williams is traveling. Tonight, Real Science Radio friend Dave Nutting is speaking at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting in Denver, and even kids will enjoy Dave's talk, so you can get the details by Googling Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Dave's got a degree in geology and in mathematics, but he's going to speak about the animals and plants of Costa Rica, and what a great talk it'll be. Please come on out if you possibly can, 7 o'clock tonight in Littleton at the Littleton Baptist Church at 1400 West Cali Ave. Okay, so our professional RSR studio engineer and I are here alone. So I thought we'd have a more relaxed program, which itself is a challenge for me because I get worked up easily. Let's look at a few news headlines from the latest Creation magazine and then some other current news. We've got a report on language. Human languages, they're not becoming more advanced, but everywhere they're devolving. They're going downhill. And if so, then how did they get so sophisticated to begin with? Then there is a report on diamonds from space. This is so neat. In a meteorite that exploded over the desert in the Sudan, and they find diamonds in these, well, there's some controversy there, not only for the evolutionist, the atheist, how do you get diamonds in space, but also between creationists, because Creation Magazine, it's published by CMI, the fabulous group down in Australia, Creation Ministries International, but they don't promote Walt Brown's Fountains of the Great Deep hydroplate theory of the global flood. And so as a result, they don't know why the moon is all beat up. They don't know why. They don't know why there is so much radioactivity, dangerous radioactivity, in the crust of the earth. They don't know why there are diamonds in these meteorites. And that's quite a tough one, not only for other creationists, but for the evolutionist. However, if you study the Fountains of the Great Deep, we know why. In fact, it's another WWB working for Walt Brown discovery. Walt Brown was here. He was on these meteorites too. So we'll get to that. Then there are two new discoveries from within the human body. There's a brand new organ. They're calling it an organ. They discovered it this year in 2018. So interesting. And it's massive. It's the equivalent of more than 2 gallons in volume. Now, how could that be, right? They're calling it an organ. Some might want to call it a tissue, like blood is a tissue, but it's the interstitium. So we'll get to that. And the second discovery is another form of DNA. You know, the double helix, it looks like a spiral staircase. Well, there's a different kind of DNA. It's been known about for a while. It's a four-stranded knot of DNA, but just now they found it in human cells. So that's fascinating. Then there's Homo erectus. You know, the evolutionists, they like to say that all these ancient human beings, that we know them from their fossils, and some of them from their DNA, because we could get DNA from ancient fossils. Well, for example, like Neanderthal, right? Neanderthal, they are human beings, and they looked a little different, just like Norwegians look a little different from Japanese, but also because they lived longer than we do. They lived in the centuries immediately after the global flood, so they lived longer, but their DNA is more similar to you. Yes, you. You didn't know your radio. We could see right through your radio. Neanderthal's DNA, we've sequenced their genome. Their DNA is more similar to your DNA than a chimpanzee's DNA is to another chimp. Two chimps. You get that? and within the same species of chimp. So there are two species of chimps. So if you take two chimps within the same species, they have greater genetic diversity between them than there is between you and a Neanderthal. So it's obvious that Neanderthals are human beings, Homo sapiens. But the evolutionist, they have a hard time admitting that. They have a hard time letting go for the facts, for the data. They prefer their alternative facts. So now the same thing with Homo erectus. There's new information that they also built ships, rowing ships, the kind of ships where you'd have 20 guys rowing. They built those ships. They sailed the seas successfully, even against the prevailing currents. Yet the evolutionists still are having trouble admitting that they were people, right? They had to communicate like we do, obviously, to build ships and to organize in that way and to be seafaring and accomplished sailors. They were human beings, just like Neanderthal, just like you. But the evolutionists, they need something, right? So they want to say that, no, they weren't human beings. Then there's another scientific development, this out of Copenhagen. Over in Europe, there was a conference in August on ancient proteins. And there was a fly on the wall in the conference. And thankfully, we're friends with the fly. So there was plenty of tension between their old Earth age paradigm. They think these fossils are millions or tens or hundreds of millions of years old, and yet they're loaded with proteins, proteins that have not yet decomposed. And so this fly on the wall tells us that there was plenty of tension between their belief in an old Earth and the data itself. A tremendous amount of still fresh, undecomposed proteins from dinosaurs and dozens of other species. The bones are similar to Egyptian mummy bones. You break those open, you look under a microscope, and you find some original biological material. It's called endogenous. The material that grew inside the person that was then mummified, these are endogenous proteins. They grew inside the dinosaurs. If you want to see a clickable list to the 100 or so scientific papers published by many of the leading peer-reviewed science journals, just go to our website, rsr.org/soft, and that stands for dinosaur soft tissue. rsr.org/soft, then click on the top link, and you'll go to our Google Docs, a spreadsheet of 99 rows, each for a paper that described some ancient, still intact, soft proteins or blood vessels. And we're talking about from a Triceratops, a T-Rex, Hadrosaurs, Archaeopteryx, Mosasaur, and so on, which is why that fly on the wall at this Copenhagen conference told us about all the tension. These fossils, these bones and feathers and skin and dinosaur eggshells, they're supposed to be tens of millions of years old. And yet they're finding what? Fresh biomaterials, red blood cells, starch, proteins like beta carotene, tubulin, collagen, chitin, hemoglobin. They're finding entire cells like osteocyte cells and the nucleus within those cells, and DNA inside the nucleus, and histone proteins. That's what the DNA wraps around, and melanosomes. It's such a blessing to know what's happening at the cutting edge of scientific discovery, and so much of it is because of our audience, which includes many professionals and working scientists within so many disciplines. Right now, this is not science. This is morality, politics, but for a moment, the Me Too movement. You know, the latest casualties at CBS, just that one corporation, right? You've got their CEO, Les Moonves, who's gone, and his executive producer for CBS News, 60 Minutes, that guy's gone. This is an enormous opportunity for Bible-believing Christians, because the truth is our ally. And the truth is that Hollywood is immoral, perverse. Their business model is a failure. You cannot sell product that sexualizes women while at the same time respecting women. That is not possible. Trafficking in human sexuality is not only wrong, it should also be criminal. And that includes pornography, whether it's online or in a TV show or a movie. So that's the latest on the Me Too front. And speaking of sexual immorality, the Pope, Pope Francis. On our website, we are just updating our Pope list. What in the world is a Pope list, right? This whole list, it's not a list of all the popes. This list is for just Francis. It's a devastating list of the horrific things, sexually immoral things and perverse things that he has said and that he has done. So we've got the latest news story, his homily this week at the Vatican, St. Peter's Square. Now we're going there October 1st, and I do believe now it's too late for folks to go. The information was on our website, rsr.org/Italy. We have our own bus, which is awesome. Maranatha Tours, they weren't sure if we'd have enough people to merit our own private bus, but we hit that threshold. And so now the trip is now going to be extra great when we've gone to Israel a few times, Bible tour of Turkey, of Greece, second time in Italy now, when in Rome do Romans. When we've had the few times we've had our own bus, it's just awesome. And so this will be a great time, but we're going there to the Vatican. And so Pope Francis, this week, with this scandal that is worldwide of when you combine all the crimes, thousands of children raped by priests, thousands, and they're mostly boys. And so what happened in Pennsylvania with the report there from their state attorney general, and now in Germany, when the Catholic Church itself commissioned a research project by three universities, that report is out. And it's just horrific. And Pope Francis said this week in his homily that the great accuser is attacking the bishops of the Catholic Church to create a scandal. Is that unbelievable? That's not only tone deaf, it's exactly morally wrong. It's spiritually bankrupt. And for years, we've been on the air for 27 years, 5 days a week, when the popes have done things that are immoral, that are perverse, we've pointed it out, not obsessively on the show, but when it's in the headlines, when you can hardly avoid it. And so often, I'm not a Catholic. I grew up Catholic. I was an altar boy, went to 8 years Catholic grammar school. I used to read the readings at the Mass. And then I became a Christian, a born-again Christian in high school. And I turned my life over to Jesus Christ. And since then, when the Pope would say something horrific, then I'd be told, oh no, that's the translator. The translator got it wrong. What the Pope said was actually good. And I come to think that there's not a translator in the world who knows what he's doing, because every single time they get it wrong. So this time, I went to the Vatican's own website. And right there, they point out Vatican.va and their VaticanNews.va, and they point out this quote. In fact, I'll read the excerpt from the Pope's homily. He said this: in these times, it seems like the great accuser, and they put that in quotes, that's a reference to the devil. He makes that clear. It seems like the great accuser has been unchained and is attacking bishops. True, we are all sinners, we bishops. He, the devil, tries to uncover the sins so they are visible in order to scandalize the people. The great accuser, as he himself says to God in the first chapter of the book of Job, roams the earth looking for someone to accuse. Hey, Pope, it's not the devil, it's the victims accusing the priest, and you are one of the hierarchy who has covered up the sexual abuse of people within the church by the clergy and by the bishops. And this is your fault. You know, there were 1,000 victims, mostly boys, molested by more than 300 priests in Pennsylvania in this latest report. In Germany, over about the last 70 years, it's 50 boys per year, or mostly boys. And notice that it's always mostly boys. 50 per year with more than 1,600 priests sexually abusing more than 3,600 mostly boys. And on it goes. Pennsylvania, Germany. What if you go one country over in Europe? What if you go to New York State in the U.S.? What if you come here to Colorado? Well, on this radio program, we have spent years trying to bring the Denver Archdiocese to accountability. Yet they've continued to hide behind their lawyers, as Bishop Samuel Aquila, like Charles Chaput before him, who have shown no contrition. But you know what? What would St. Pete say? I think he might say their chickens will come home to roost. I think he might say that. Now, you can hear my interview in the last year with one of the victims of Father Neil Hewitt here in Denver. And you can hear me read the handwritten note left behind from another victim molested as a boy who later committed suicide. And all that's documented at rsr.org/victim. rsr.org/victim. You know, we've been at this a long time. In fact, today we were sort of laughing. We shouldn't laugh. It shouldn't be funny, but it's so bizarre. With all the transgenderism going on, we asked the question, can a priest become a nun? What would happen if a priest wanted to become a nun? What would the Vatican say? How could they object? Who am I to judge? Remember Francis said, who am I to judge? And on the air, we went on the air that day and we said, well, for starters, you're the Pope. How about that? But we remembered that we did a radio show with that title, Can a Priest Become a Nun? Back in 2002, 16 years ago. So what would Francis have to say about that? You know, he wouldn't even have to change his name if he went for it. Anyway, 16 years ago, so we've been at this for a long time. Now, to this article in the current issue of Creation Magazine, and that's basically the fall issue of 2018, it talks about grammar in human language. Grammar is going downhill. And let me excerpt this for you. If you think the general standard of English grammar is slipping, you're right. Now, we've raised 7 boys. We've mostly homeschooled, some Christian school. Early on, sadly, more public school, but we got out of that. And one of our sons said to us just a week ago that interacting with a large group of kids from the local high school, you know, it's one of those good schools. When you go to buy a house, they say, oh, this is the best, this is award-winning public school district. This high school, it's one of the best in the country. And so it's one of those schools, you know. And the question of English grammar came up with a group of about 18 teenagers. And they asked, well, what is a verb? What is an adjective? Hey, raise your hand if you know what a verb is. Do you know what an adjective is? Most of them knew what a noun was. Thankfully, they remembered that person, place, or thing. But most of them had no idea what a verb was. They didn't know what an adjective was. How is that? And so human language, not just English, but language in general and the structural complexity of all languages is simplifying. So while our vocabulary tends to increase, right, because of technology, you invent something new, and so people make up words. So the vocabulary increases, but the sophistication of the language, the structure of the language decreases. For example, English language is like Greek, right? Koine Greek. If you want to learn English, you study Greek. And then you learn everything they didn't teach you in school about English. But they're not only verb tenses, they're also moods, like indicative, subjunctive, and so on. And indicative, you make a statement, it's an indicative mood. If you make a statement that's contrary to fact, it's a subjunctive mood. So if you're thinking about what if you were king, right? You wouldn't say, if I was king. You'd say, if I were king. Now, somebody might think, well, that's the wrong form of the verb, if I was, not if I were. But because it's not indicative, because it's subjunctive, you say, if I were king. So I like to read books from hundreds of years ago, and the authors had a better command of the English language than our magazine and newspaper writers today. So the editors at Creation Magazine, they ask a question. If languages are being dumbed down, they're becoming less sophisticated, less complex, then how did they become sophisticated in the first place? There are tribes in Africa where their verb tenses, they don't just have past, present, and future, past perfect and pluperfect. Well, they have the recent past, the distant past, where it's minutes ago, days ago, many moons ago, and that's all in their verb tenses. So languages around the world, about 100 different language groups initially, were very sophisticated, and they're being dumbed down. So the origin of language is supernatural. They did not evolve. Human beings supposedly were grunting cavemen at the time of Homo erectus and Neanderthal, and yet their languages were wildly sophisticated, and they're deteriorating. Just like our DNA and organisms are not becoming more advanced, more sophisticated, they're deteriorating not only in the human genome, but all organisms. And so Darwin, all his predictions about human language, the evolution of human language, they were all proved wrong. And they were proved wrong not only by creationists, but by some of the world's leading linguists like Edward Sapir and Noam Chomsky. And Darwin thought that there were some languages, like he was a racist, and he thought that there were some tribes where we would find out that their languages were primitive because they were closer to apes, like he thought that blacks were and aborigines were. Yeah, he wrote that in his book, The Descent of Man. I wrote an article on it, quote right from him. And so it turns out that he was wrong. There is no such thing as primitive human languages from which our more modern languages advanced. He thought that animal grunts would be shown to be steps toward language. Totally false. There is almost no similarity between the two phenomena. Animals, you can have an animal all alone on a deserted island, and it knows how to bark just fine, knows how to chirp just fine. But a baby would not know how to speak human language if it grew up isolated from other humans. Darwin thought that the evidence of language evolution would exist and it would become obvious. And he was exactly wrong, because human language did not originate through a materialist mechanism, but at the Tower of Babel, the one language that had existed was split into approximately 100 language groups. For example, we've done our Bible tour of Turkey. Turkey is their own language group that's not related to any other group. Okay, now, Diamonds from Space. Creation Magazine talks about this, and the BBC wrote a report back in April of this year about these meteorite fragments in the Nubian Desert in the Sudan. And these particular kinds of meteorites, they have tiny diamonds in them. Now, diamonds are what? They're carbon. You take a large number of carbon atoms and you compress them with enough heat and pressure, and they turn into diamonds. Well, in space, there's no vegetation in space. There are no living organisms in space. Carbon on Earth is condensed by living organisms that take carbon atoms out of the air, out of the soil, and build bodies. We call organisms carbon-based. They're actually information-based, but the physical substrate is largely carbon. So on Earth, there's a biological mechanism to condense carbon, and then given the right pressure and temperature, it could turn into diamonds. But there is no vegetation in space. So what's going on with these diamonds in these meteorites? Well, Creation Magazine reports that scientists studying them have suggested that these came from the breakup of a planet in our solar system, a planet that existed billions of years ago. And they say that only a large planet could produce the pressures necessary to form diamonds. Now, diamonds have within them carbon-14. Carbon-14 only lasts thousands of years, then it decays into nitrogen. You can't have carbon-14 for a billion years. We're told that diamonds are anywhere from 1 to 3 billion years old, yet they're loaded with carbon-14, and you can't contaminate the inside of a diamond, not very easily. It's the hardest known naturally occurring substance on Earth. So how are you going to get a diamond in space? If only a large planet could produce it, then they think that planet exploded. Well, the problem with that is gravity. Well, the problem with that is gravity doesn't allow it. If a planet exploded, let's say Mount Everest started to go 50 miles up into the sky, Mount Everest. You know what would happen? It'd be pulled right back down. If a planet went to explode, it doesn't have a nuclear core like a star and a supernova. If a planet was to explode, if somebody put a massive atomic bomb inside a planet and it actually broke up in pieces, if it expanded at all, then it would immediately fall back in on itself, immediately. And so the whole concept is false. But what's interesting then is to see what the editors of Creation Magazine think about it, because they don't believe that the moon was beat up by the fountains of the Great Deep, the debris ejected during the global flood. And they don't know that that's why the near side of the moon was beat up far more severely with its maria, the seas they used to call them, than the backside of the moon, which is sprinkled with much tinier craters compared to the maria on the near side, which they were completely molten because of how energetic, how massive those collisions were on the near side. So CMI, the editors of Creation Magazine, they don't agree with any of that. So let's see what they say about these diamonds. They say that the scientist interpretation of a planetary destruction is plausible. Wait a minute. No, it's not plausible. A large planet has not exploded in the solar system. If you take all the debris of the solar system, it's about what? The amount of a moon. There's not a large planet worth of debris in the solar system. Not only that, gravity wouldn't allow a large planet to explode in the first place. And in addition to that, we actually have the written history of the Earth and the solar system. And there are no exploding planets in that history. So CMI, when you reject the Fountains of the Great Deep model of the global flood, they reject, increasingly, they're acknowledging, just like Ken Ham in Answers in Genesis, that the Fountains of the Great Deep, while the Bible indicates their water, their fountains, their water, and the church for thousands of years, and the rabbis before that, everybody knew the fountains were water, but they reject the hydroplate theory that the water for the flood came from below the crust. So that forces them into a flood model where you don't add water. There's no new water to flood the earth. So they say the fountains of the Great Deep were lava, magma. And that's just false. But anyway, with that model, they don't know that the meteorites that hit the earth are coming home. And the reason that some of them have diamonds in them is because you find diamonds in the crust of the earth. That's why. In fact, meteorites, as Dr. Walt Brown points out, PhD from MIT, meteorites contain diamonds, salt crystals, water, limestone, how about that? DNA components. It appears that they contain cellulose, sugars, living and fossil bacteria. They contain mostly left-handed amino acids, like in living organisms, and many earth-like minerals, isotopes, and other components that indicate that the earth is the source of those meteorites. The fountains of the great deep were the powerful launchers. So the editors of Creation Magazine, they say, now it is plausible that a large planet exploded and that's what formed the diamonds. Actually, that's not plausible. But then they point out it's only the billions of years that contradict the Bible's history. And so, no, it's not only the billions of years. There was no exploding planet in our solar system. And then they conclude a catastrophic planetary event in our solar system should not surprise us, as the Bible explains that the whole of creation is currently in bondage to decay, and such an event may help explain the moon's rapid bombardment with asteroids. And actually, no. That everything there is completely false. There is no planetary explosion. Because Adam and Eve sinned, that doesn't cause a planet to explode. It doesn't. The ecosystem on Earth was corrupted, and the Garden of Eden was no longer tilled, and the four rivers that flowed out of the garden were stopped up eventually after 1,000 and some years. Eventually, pressure built up below the crust, and the crust of the earth ruptured, and from 60 miles below the surface, water and debris came up with such force, reached escape velocity, left Earth's atmosphere, and bombarded the moon and Mercury and Venus and Mars, and formed the meteorites and the asteroids and the comets and the TNOs. So that as you leave the Earth and you head toward the asteroid belt out near Jupiter, where do you think there's more debris in the solar system? Near the Earth's orbit or out by the asteroid belt? Well, an evolutionist would think that the debris would be out by the asteroid belt because that's where all the mess is. But the bigger rocks from the fountains of the great deep, they were pushed by the solar wind more efficiently, and they were all pushed out near Jupiter, and they were sort of shepherded in by Jupiter's gravity into the asteroid belt. But the micrometeorites and the grains of sand-sized meteorites, the pebbles, they're mostly in Earth's orbit. So that debris from the global flood just 5,000 years ago, that debris is still mostly out there. The Earth's been sweeping it up, millions of these micrometeorites burning up in Earth's atmosphere every year. So we've been sweeping it up, but it's still there. All right, we're about out of time. We have the biological discoveries. I think we'll have to save those for another program. And Homo erectus, ship building, rowing, sailing the seas against the prevailing currents, and evolutionists still have trouble admitting that they were people. I asked Lawrence Krauss, remember him, theoretical physicist, in trouble with the Me Too movement? Last I read, he wasn't allowed on two campuses. And he got fired from the Origins Project at Arizona State University. I attended there for a couple years, studied computer science, artificial intelligence. So he's no longer with, they didn't renew his contract for the Origin Project. And he said that he sort of expected he'd be fired from there. And another university wasn't allowed on. And in the atheist cruise, he got kicked off an atheist cruise. Do you know how bad you got to be kicked off of an atheist cruise? And he was the draw. He was the celebrity. But the women involved said they didn't want him. And not because of the headlines about him, but because of their own experience with him. So what a mess. Same thing with Jack Horner up at Montana State University and Museum of the Rockies. back when we offered Jack Horner $23,000 grant for the museum there if they would carbon date their soft tissue dinosaur bone. And he almost agreed. He said he'll talk to Mary Schweitzer, and then he backed out. That was sad. But anyway, hey, we're out of time. So for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent designer.